make a walk with me, not like you used to do. Something different, put yourself in other people's shoes. Open up your mind and open up your eyes and change your direction, change your perspective.
Welcome into Other People's Shoes. As you know, I am your host, Neil Matthews. Thank you so much for joining me today. Super excited that you've chosen to stop by today. It's a great day to stop by. Why? Let me give you at least one reason to stop by. You know this map that we've been talking about for the last 3 years? Know it, right? You've memorized it. You know where we've been. If we played Where Have We Been trivia on Other People's Shoes, you would be able to answer this question, right? Have we been to New Mexico? The correct answer is what? No. We haven't until now. So help me welcome in our guest from the great state of New Mexico. I'm not even sure. Are they Mexico? Are they the New Mexico? I don't know. We could make jokes all day about that, but we won't. Help me welcome her in, Shelby. Shelby, how are you today?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me. And yes, we are part of the United States. But yes, New Mexico.
Now, it's always weird to me too, because there is a New Mexico, but there's not a New England state. It's very weird.
That is true.
It's very weird on that. And so geographically, I think we get challenged on that. They're like, wait, there is a New England. No, there isn't. Truly, there's not. But there is a New Mexico.
Yes. And I live outside of Albuquerque in a little village. Actually, that sounds so funny, but it's called a village. But it's like a 100 billion years old little place where we still live in adobe houses, which are very pretty. But yes.
So my kid sister, I lovingly call her that because we've been friends since middle school. I actually met her before I met my wife, believe it or not. And she lived in Alamogordo, New Mexico. She was talking about even White Sands, New Mexico, which is pretty cool too. You ever made it out there?
I've actually never been to White Sands, but I plan to. Hopefully this year I want to go because I have heard it is so beautiful and people know it from all over the world. So I'd like to go. Yes. And Alamogordo, there's not a whole lot in Alamogordo. So I think that's one of the big things of like making it all the way out there. It's like, oh, just to see a bunch of sand, but yeah. I'd like to go.
Just make sure the water doesn't run dry. That's a little play on Boys to Men. They sang that song, The Water Runs Dry, I think, and I'm messing it up. They shot that video in White Sands, if I'm not mistaken. But Shelby, I'm so excited that you're here today. One, because you're from New Mexico, but two, because a little bit of your background has me excited. For years now, I have studied, I have learned, I have been intrigued by the Mormon faith. And you, my friend, if I can use that friend word, hopefully we can now, you've walked out of that. But I've never gotten an opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with a woman who has walked out of the Mormon faith. We had a guy a couple seasons back. And again, I value women's thoughts because they're different than mine. And they're just, they got a mom thought. They got a woman thought. They got all these other thoughts. So I know I'm putting maybe, hopefully not too much pressure on you.
No, not at all.
But I'm excited to sit with you from that conversation standpoint. So thank you. Thank you for being willing to come on and share a little bit of that. Before we get into you and that, we got to know this, of course. What style of shoe do you like to wear?
So lately it has been On running shoes. Now, before COVID, I mostly wore heels, I think, all of the time, which killed me, but I love to run. And so now I pretty much spend all of my time as a fellow podcaster in On running shoes. I love those. Have you tried them? They're awesome.
What are they again?
They're On Cloud or something along those lines. They have like this weird little symbol on them. And it took me forever to even knew what they were. But yeah, they're like On Cloud running shoes and they're amazing.
On Cloud running shoes. You run in those?
Yes. And I love them. They're awesome.
What color are they?
My ones today are like a bright orange coral color. They're awesome.
Okay. Wow. I have seen those. So those are really good.
Yeah. They're great.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I need to get back into running, which I do, everyone would tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get these.
Yes. Those are going to be the ones.
I need to break my deal with ASICS and not that I have a shoe deal, but maybe one day. But I need to go get those, right?
Yes.
That's what I need to do?
That's what you need.
So are you encouraging me to buy another pair of shoes? Just asking for a friend.
Yeah. Do it. Do it.
Okay. So that's awesome. So there's this like kind of coral color. We love that a lot. That's fun. Fun colors, especially when you're running, because you need fun colors because you might get hit by a car otherwise, right?
You could, unless you're in a village where I am, where there's not that many people.
There are no cars. There are just buggies and horses.
No, it sounds silly. No, there's plenty of cars. I'm just joking around.
But getting into you and getting into what you're about, we've been asking people this question, like this aglet, which to help is this plastic thing, metal thing at the end of our shoelace that if it wasn't there, our life would kind of unravel. And then a guest challenged me recently. He said, well, what if that aglet was cut off? how does life continue to work for the shoelace if it's cut off? How does it get through the eye hole to serve its purpose, to do what it's meant to do? And I'm like, man, that is really philosophical, all for a shoelace. But I want to ask you that question. How hard was it for you to truly walk away from the LDS faith?
Ooh, that's kind of I like that way that you went into that. You know, to be completely honest with you, I feel like my entire life, I was kind of an unraveled shoelace until I found what true surrender actually meant. I think that is the moment that maybe that little piece got put on my shoelace. That I had always been unraveled in some way. Yeah, leaving the Mormon Church was interesting. So I guess a little bit about my backstory in the fact I grew up in a mixed faith home. So my dad was LDS. My mom was not. My mom went through 7 sets of missionaries and never joined the church. But from a very young age, so from at eight, you have to decide. You don't even decide really in the Mormon Church. You just get baptized. That's just what you do. For me, it was actually a decision, which is not something that most kids have. So I had my dad, who would be heartbroken if I didn't, and my mom, who would be heartbroken if I did. And that pressure and kind of where that came was a serious struggle. I look back now at my life and just how God kind of worked through my life from the very beginning. He put me in that position so that I would be a questioner, so that I would have to re-examine things and really look at things. Through that whole kind of process, I think I just felt very unraveled for a very long time. What does this all mean? Why am I doing all of this? What does God really want for me? Is there even a God? You know what I mean? It was a very confusing time until I understood the moment of surrender. And then everything changed. So I would say that is my little piece that got put on my shoelace.
Well, let's be honest. When I hear the word surrender, for me, it invokes a lot of emotion. It invokes a lot of feeling. It invokes a lot of sadness, even. Was surrender a happy thing for you? Or am I alone in my sadness and like not wanting to do it? Or are you with me in that?
Yeah, so I get that. And when people would say you have to surrender to God, and I was always like, oh yeah, okay, whatever. Like, yeah, sure. You know, God take the wheel, you know, but I didn't really understand what that meant. It did take something that was really hard in my life where I had to come to that moment of saying, God, I really do truly need help here. And so for me, it was beautiful and amazing because for the very first time in my life, I heard God, and that was so incredible. However, what got me there was very sad and hard. So if that makes any sense at all, it is sad, but it's beautiful at the same time. And I would go back and I would do all of that hard again to get to that place, because everything after that changed. And I work to surrender again every single day now. Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful, actually.
So if you're willing, walk us back through that. You say it was hard. You say it felt free once you kind of walk through that tunnel, if you will, of surrender, or that moment of surrender. I think of a tunnel being just enclosed and scary and dark and, you know, not a fun place to be. And let's face it, when I hear surrender, it doesn't sound like a fun place to be. But help us walk through that. What was that like? Take us into those shoes, if you don't mind.
Sure. So let me just like break it down. Okay. So when I was growing up, like I said, I lived in this mixed faith household, and it was hard and it was difficult, but I did identify as Mormon because I went to church with my dad every week. My mom never really put up a fight about it. She wasn't happy about it, but she never put up a fight about it because she knew that's what was needed for our family, because my dad is devout. I mean, he is so involved in his church, and she knew that we needed to, and you know, my mom's an amazing person. She knew that we needed to continue as a family. And they're still married 40 years later, which doesn't happen very often. And it still is an issue. It still is a thing. They still are married. And it was difficult to grow up in that, though, to see kind of some different aspects. Although my mom really didn't outwardly practice her faith at all, it was just being in the Mormon church. That's what I knew. And that's who I knew of God. And growing up in the Mormon church, it very much is about, and they would like to argue probably about this, but it very much is about your works and everything that you need to do. There is a path that you have to follow in order to reach the highest level of heaven. So you're given grace up to a certain point, that Jesus died for all of us, and that we all, everybody on the earth, will go to heaven. However, if you want to actually see God in heaven, you have to follow this path and you have to go through these things. But I was always different in the church because I didn't get baptized at 8. I waited until I was 10, which I didn't even find out until much later that that meant me, I was a convert, even though I had grown up in the church. Crazy, right? I had to have missionaries and everything as well. They wouldn't just let me get baptized. I had to have missionaries as a 10-year-old. It was complicated. And I knew that I stood out as somebody who was different. Because of that, I think there was a little bit of rebellion also. But at a certain point, I realized that I couldn't sit there and say that I knew God. I didn't know him. I would sit there in church and I knew I didn't know God at all. And I didn't really know what he wanted for me. I knew what the church wanted for me. So it was very much workspace and always kind of like what I need to be doing. So I left the church actually when I was 18. I had a, this is kind of crazy, but I had this dream. I saw Jesus in the supermarket. Everybody was like, Jesus is at the supermarket. He's in the fruit section. Of course he'd be in the fruit section, right? And I was like, so excited. I'm like, I'm going to go see Jesus in the fruit section. And I got there and he didn't know me. He didn't know me, which was crazy. And the thing is I had been praying and crying myself to sleep at night, praying to God to tell me that this church was true. But God doesn't tell you crazy things. So he never told me that this church was true. He instead was silent. And I don't feel like I ever really truly knew him. And then in this whole moment, he didn't know me. And of course, that's Matthew chapter 7, right? When Jesus says that I won't know you. But I didn't know that because I didn't read the Bible. I didn't know that that's what that meant. I just knew it freaked me out. And at 18, I decided that I was not, when I graduated high school, I wasn't going to go back to church. And so I didn't. And so this like took me on this 20-year journey of kind of being lost. At first, I walked away from God altogether. And then I got pregnant with my son. I knew that when I felt him in my belly that I could feel his soul with me. And I knew there had to be a God, but I didn't know what that meant. And so I'm like, okay, maybe I'm Christian. So I'll go to some Christian churches. Maybe I'm this. I'll go do this for a little while. And so for 20 years, I bounced around between trying to figure out who God was and still never really talking to him, never really knowing him. But the thing is with your kids is that if you don't help them to know God, because he's all around us, if you don't help them to know him, they will look outwardly for something else because God fills that hole in us that is there, whether we know it or not, we're going to be searching for something. And so unfortunately, not giving that to my kids because I was afraid to do too much with my kids because I felt like too much had been done with me. I didn't do anything. And because of that, I feel like my daughter ended up during some bad internet time, believing everything the world had to tell her about herself, which was not good. It was not pretty. She didn't know the love of God. And it sent me into a place that for the first time in my whole life, all the works that I had been doing and all the things that I had been doing, this mentality, this mindset that I had brought with me from being younger in the fact that I had to work for everything I did, work for my salvation, work for approval, work for the world's approval, work for everything. Cause that's the mindset, is the working for everything. I couldn't fix this. I was incapable. For the first time, it was like, there was nothing that I could do that would make this any better. And it really truly was because I had not brought God into my life. And I don't know why this realization all of a sudden happened, but at 2:30 in the morning, I hit my knees and I prayed for the first time truly to the real God. Asked him for help and basically told him, I can't do this. The world keeps telling me I'm enough. The world keeps telling me that I have this all together. The world keeps telling me that I got this. And for the first time, I realized I don't got this. There's nothing that I could possibly do that could fix this situation. And I literally am giving it to you. I need your help. And that was true surrender. He showed up. I met God for the first time and he told me it's not going to be easy, but it's going to be okay. And from there on, it was like every single step I took was listening to him and knowing that I am never going to be enough. And that's okay. Like, it's okay that I am a mess and I am going to make mistakes and I will never be perfect, which is a big part of that mindset from being younger.
Do you know when you talk about your kids, you light up even more?
Yeah, because that is kind of like that's the whole thing for me. I mean, that's my kids are what truly brought me.
As you talk about them, your whole body changes, your mannerisms change, your eyes get a little maybe weepier as a mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to say thank you. Thank you for giving us that. And I always respect that about folks, that they just come on and they want to share and they want to get us into their shoes. And it's why I love doing what I do, you know. But I want to go back to a couple of things you said. First off, the Matthew verse that you reference, is not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does, the Father, my Father who is in heaven, will know them. And to me, it's so impactful to think about you having this dream. Because let's face it, I don't care if you're a Christian, I don't care if you're Buddhist, I don't care if you're Mormon, I don't care if you're Hindu, I don't care if you're Muslim, am I missing anybody? Catholic? I don't care who you are if you're a person of faith. Big faith word there, big parenthesis around that. I think everybody wants to meet Jesus. I've met non-believers that want to meet Jesus. Now, listen, when you're talking about a grocery store, I'm thinking like supermarket sweep. Like I'm thinking like, let's get to the, you know, fruit section. Is he picking peaches? Is he got an apple? I mean, what's going on there? And then for you to get there in this dream and him saying, who? Shelby? Never heard of you. That would crush me.
Yeah. It was a really big moment. So I, like I said, from the time I was 8, I prayed every night, God, tell me the church is true. God, tell me that the prophet is real. God, tell me that the church is true. And the thing is I don't know if everybody feels this way, but I definitely felt growing up in the Mormon church, we really didn't read the Bible. Like you'd read verse here and there. It was kind of picked and choosed kind of which verses would go. So I never sat there and read the Bible, so I wouldn't know. Then I realized 20 years later, after I surrendered, I still could see that dream in my I close my eyes, I can see it just so vividly. And he says, so it's chapter 7, verse 15. It says, first, the heading is a tree and its fruit. 15 is beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. And then if you jump down to the next one, the next big heading, I never knew you. And the last part is, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. And I'm like, wow, like Jesus like quoted scripture to me. And I didn't even know the Bible. Is this so weird? I mean, I know it's strange. I know people say, you know, don't base everything off your feelings and you have to be careful of dreams. But at that moment, that was the, I can honestly say that was the only true moment that I felt like I had an interaction with God. I didn't ever feel him going to church. I never knew him. I didn't feel him until that moment. It was wild.
Listen, let's be clear. Let's do a little disclaimer here. Shelby is not coming on. Her whole intention, my whole intention of inviting her on today is not to come on and bash the Mormon church. I want to be abundantly clear on that. That is your heart, yes?
Yes, absolutely. Right.
To not do that. You have family still involved. You have people that you love and care for. That is not her intention. So if you think this is going to be an hour long just bash session on the LDS church, the Mormon faith, whatever, wrong channel, you might want to just turn it off now. We're not here to do that. But we are here to get her perspective. We are here to hear what she felt, what she experienced. Now, in that process, is it going to sound negative? It could, but that's her perspective. I want to be clear on that. I want to be abundantly clear on that. What we're saying is why it didn't work for her. That's it. Mm-hmm. How you interpret that is how you interpret that. Going back into your stuff a little more, you said you just felt like you stood out, that you were different. How did you feel different? Why did you feel different?
Well, a big part of the church is family. I mean, that's a huge, it's almost more important than anything else is the idea of families are forever. That really is kind of what the whole basis for the faith is wrapped around. And for me, I stood out because my family was not all in the church. And I was there. My dad was there. My sister was there. My mom would come with us usually to kind of the beginning part. And it wasn't every weekend. We stood out though as different. And when I then was 8 and making that decision to be baptized, because it wasn't made for me, I did have to decide on that. It made me different. And I remember sitting in classes and then being like, well, this applies to everybody else in here, but you, Shelby, because you're not baptized yet. And it was different. It's cultural. It's a complete cultural social package. And the idea of the family unit and the fact that I didn't fit in that. And so that didn't mean though that I couldn't have still totally been in love with the faith. For me, I think the biggest thing of all of it is I truly did not ever feel like I felt God. And that was my experience. I never really had that connection. I had connection with people there. I had that connection with, I wanted to please my dad. I really, really wanted to please my dad. But I can say this with all of my heart. I was so hungry to know him. I mean, I truly, it was not like I did not try. I mean, I prayed every night. And all of my best friends were Mormons. And so it wasn't like I did not try. It was a full effort in there. But in the end, I feel like that kind of that moment that I was really struggling, like I'm hungry for him. And then I feel like I had that little dream in there and some other different things that happened with school and learning about different faiths. I was like, you know, I just, my heart is not here. My heart's not being filled here. That hunger isn't being filled here.
So you talk about at 18, kind of having that, I don't know, wake up moment, that Genesis moment to say, okay, I'm out. What led to that decision?
World history in high school. I had this wonderful teacher named Mr. Bear. I have no idea what his actual religious affiliation was, but if you know the history, the world history is the history of religion because that really determined a lot of what happened in the world. And for the first time, I really saw there was another way. Like actually the other people do think about things differently. And here I have felt different my whole life for not feeling God. And there are other ways that people believe. My grandparents were Catholic, so I did go to Catholic church occasionally when I was younger with them, but it never really occurred to me that there was another way to believe. And that is, I think, maybe what kind of prompted the whole dream that I did have and everything. I was really at a moment where it was like, okay, I'm struggling and I do want to know God. And then that happened. And then I was like, okay, I think I'm just going to have to say, my heart's not here. It was not like okay, now I get to leave moment. When you actually think about, okay, everything I've ever known about God, my entire life, everything I've ever known about him, I am going to walk away from, your brain kind of explodes. Which is exactly what happened. My brain kind of exploded. I was like, holy smokes, everything I know about God could not be true. And I think that's why most people, they say 85% of people who leave the church become atheist or agnostic, which I didn't know those words necessarily, but I will say when I decided to leave the Mormon church, I left God. For about 5 years there, I just didn't even want to deal with it. I just put it away. I don't even want to believe about anything at the current moment.
But just to help, there wasn't like an event. There wasn't like somebody offended you. There wasn't somebody, I don't know, said something bad about your mom because your mom's not involved. I mean, there wasn't anything like that, right?
No, because that stuff happens all the time. And I think that's a really big misconception is people think that people leave the church because they want to sin or that they're offended. That is like the two number one things that people still in the church I hear say for people that leave. And for me, no, it was because I was hungry to know God and I knew I didn't feel him there. And graduating from high school, being able to go to college gave me an out. And I do feel for people who are in it, who are at that place where they felt like I felt, you know, or they feel where they're not feeling God, but they don't have an out. I think that would be really difficult. For me, it was fairly easy to just say, I'm not going back because now I'm going to college and I'm not going to go find a church when I'm there. It was pretty easy. That was an easy moment for me. It wasn't easy mentally. It gave me the ability to walk away. But I can say this, I did not actually walk away from the church then. So to put this in perspective too, there was no internet at that time. I mean, the internet was just a baby, you know, it was just this little thing. So like there was no CES letter. There was no letter to my wife. There was no Journal of Discourse. There was none of that for me to go and look up or anything. That's a big part for people now. You know, you start questioning, you go on the internet and then it's like, bam, you know, but that did not occur for me. It was easier for me to just leave it alone for a while.
That's fantastic. I love that. See, this is the perspective that I'm talking about, is because there are those people out there that are like, well, why didn't you just research this out? Like go to the internet, ask Google, ask Jeeves, ask, you know, your neighbor down the street. Is this true? Is this right? Is this perfect for me? But we really didn't have those things in those days. It's interesting though. I want to go back to the dream again, just because I'm so fascinated by it, by the way. It's kind of ironic in a sense, because Joseph Smith gets a dream or a visitor, Moroni, the angel, telling him about the golden plates, where they're buried, can't go get them yet, gotta wait a year, whatever it is. Might be wrong on that. But it's interesting that you kind of have a similar dream, but it's Jesus, not Moroni.
Well, okay. So my dream was very fantastical. And I think it had a lot just to do with what was happening in my life. You know, because I truly believe now that God speaks to us through his word. And because I didn't read his word, I feel like God was like, hello, I'm over here. Listen to me. He had to speak to me in some way. And then to back it up on the whole Joseph Smith thing, he had supposedly a vision is what it was. And there are three different accounts of this vision. And it goes over multiple six even? Okay, so there's three that are...
I've heard upwards of seven, not to interrupt you, but I've heard upwards of seven.
Okay, so there's three that actually are written document and that I know you can read and all that stuff. They ended up picking the one that fit the most that goes with it. And then it was years after it actually supposedly happened before he actually disclosed it to anybody. I don't know. It's hard to say with all of that on the reality of it all. I don't know. All I know is my experience and kind of how I walked through this and how much it actually all made sense when I came to that moment of surrender and I started to read his word. And it was like every time I read his word, he showed me something else and he showed me that. And it all just made sense. Here I was thinking that he had never been there for me, that I was hungry for him and he had never been there. When I could now look back and see all the places that he had been in my life and guiding me in my life and waiting for me to just say, God, I give it to you. And wasn't it a place where maybe I could?
But in this, Shelby, now you mentioned your dad's still involved. How has that relationship with dad been for you?
When I left the church, we never really talked about it again. I know that sounds weird. When I was getting married, he did say, will you not even consider getting married in the church? And I said, no. And he said, you know, you'll never be happy without it. And that was hard to hear because I love my dad and I'm very close to my dad. Like I really am very close to my dad. There is this huge elephant always in the room and kind of a wall put up there. So that was the last time we had talked about it until more recently, because now I have a podcast where I talk about God. And so this is something that we've had to talk about because I still have never turned in my resignation letters from the church. God doesn't keep paperwork. So I think that's silly. It's just, I don't even care. But that means that I still have people in the church. I've lived in the same 20-mile radius my whole life. So all these people that I grew up with are still part of the church. I still have like a home teacher who will come and drop stuff off on my front doorstep. She's amazing. She's a wonderful woman. I love her. She's great. She's probably one of the best people I know in my life. We obviously don't agree. So, but he knows, is I guess what I'm saying. He knows that I am saying things that are not in line with his church. I guess the thing that's been the hardest for me about it, if I was him and I truly believed that my daughter's salvation, my own salvation, my ability to meet God one day, the whole thing is dependent upon her being in the church, I would have talked about it. I would have brought it up. I would have been a little bit more serious about trying to bring me in back into the church. And he never did. And he's never even asked why I left. And that part has been hard for me. I'm not going to lie. That part has been hard for me because I know he loves me. And that's odd. I don't understand that. I can honestly say I don't understand that. More recently, though, I don't know why I got like this wild hair where I felt like I really needed to talk about God with him. And this is like seriously 22 years after I left. And so we've been texting and we are now reading the New Testament simultaneously. And then we message each other verses that speak to us. We've been in some arguments because I feel like maybe he's not actually reading it. He's just reading lessons from the church. And so he'll send me a lesson from the church. And I'm like, that's not what we decided to do. We were going to just read the Bible together. That's been fascinating too, because I mean, I remember being taught this when I was younger and I didn't realize how deep those things ran, that he does not have true faith in the Bible. And that's been a struggle. So I don't know if you knew that about the Mormon church, that it is the least trustworthy of all of the scriptural doctrine. And so as long as it's been translated correctly is even part of their teachings. And so not having true faith in what it says, it's okay if it contradicts everything else, because we will believe everything else over the Bible. And that's been complicated. So we're about to get into Romans, me and him together, and that's going to be real fun.
Romans is a tough book, whether you're a believer or a non-believer, so I can only imagine. Well, that's awesome that you're still trying to, in a sense, reconcile things with him the best you can. The Bible does talk about that, you know, as far as it depends upon you, be at peace with all people. I'm wondering about mom too, though, because I feel like mom is on this, maybe I'm over-exaggerating this, but I feel like she's on this island like Castaway, you know, in Tom Hanks. Like she's on this island kind of waiting to be saved and waiting to be rescued. How are you and her?
Well, since I think I really did come to Jesus and I really have dedicated my whole life to listening to him and to following him and how my life is completely turned around, because it has. I mean, like I feel like a completely transformed person since giving it to God and to following him. I mean, that comes out in every aspect of who I am. My mom is one of my best friends. And so I talk to her all the time, and she has seen this too. She knows this. She's always had faith, although I feel like, unfortunately, she's had to kind of suppress her journey, because in order to keep the peace, she really hasn't been able to live her faith like she wanted to. This has been kind of fun because maybe I'm stirring up trouble in my family. Maybe that's just what I do. I really have just encouraged her to follow God, and she is, and she has. And so now she has Bibles all over in her house, and she's listening to Christian people on TikTok, which I think is hysterical that my mom loves TikTok so much, but she does. And I think it really does kind of maybe disrupt them some things sometimes. I know my dad the other night, he's like, "You and Shelby both, what is going on with you guys?" He was all frustrated. That's okay. I mean, it's okay, because I feel like it's all for God. If sometimes we have to be stirred up. He's working on him right now. I really feel like God is working on him right now. Everywhere he goes, it feels like someone's telling him something. So maybe, I don't know. Maybe there's still hope.
But Shelby, I'm excited. Again, your energy, your smile, it's contagious. It's coming across really well. But there haven't always been smiles. There haven't always been those moments where we can kind of laugh and have fun. And there have been some bad moments. Because let's face it, when we become Christians, I think there is still this stereotype, like everything's going to be good. This is going to be full of just awesomeness and everything goes our way because God loves us and we're children of God and let's celebrate. It's not the case.
And I guess if I could say anything, like, oh, this is probably one of the biggest things that I could tell people is when you do grow up in the church, and I think in any more legalistic type of church, what you do, your works very much translate to your blessings. And how good your life seems is based upon how well you are doing. And it all kind of falls together. I really did live that for a long time. And like I said, feeling very, very empty, because how is it that everyone is able to do all the things and I can't do all the things? And here I am trying to do all the things. And I just feel like a failure. Like I felt like a failure with everything. And I know so many women who are in the church still today are still in that mindset and still feeling that way. In fact, I talked to someone the other day and they were talking about how in their patriarchal blessing, it told them if they listened to the Holy Ghost, that they would never make another mistake in their entire life, that they would be perfect. And I'm like, only God is perfect. And that mindset, it just leaves you so open to depression. It leaves you really open to just feeling like you're never going to be able to succeed. And I feel for those people. I feel for them. I mean, my heart just, it breaks for that mindset, because that is the true thing that is the transformation. That is the true change, is when you realize you can't do that and that you can't be perfect. And it's awesome. It's beautiful, like I said, it's awesome in that transformation that you can have, but it also gives you the ability to realize that even though things are going to be really hard, but he will be the peace in that storm. That is, I think that's the whole crux of all of it.
Well, one thing that comes to mind when you talk about that, did you ever watch the movie Mary Poppins? That ever make it out your way?
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines in that movie, when she's measuring the kids, you know, you remember this? And she measures herself and she says, "Well, practically perfect in every way."
Yeah.
Like at the time as a kid, I was like, yeah, Mary Poppins is perfect. She can't do anything wrong. What's the challenge if a woman today is struggling in your mind? And maybe you've been there. Sounds like you kind of have. If they're like, well, I just have to be practically perfect in every way and I'm going to be okay. What's the danger in that for you?
You know, it's funny. After I left the church at 18, I don't feel like I truly left until I say around 25 or so, when I did find the internet. And then it was like, okay, now for real, I'm going to just go ahead and the research, I put it all away. I didn't change the mindset. The mindset was still there. It is so damaging because the world also wants to tell you the same thing right now. I feel like everywhere in the self-help world, everywhere in the new age, everywhere in the everything, they all want to tell you the same thing, that you have this thing inside of you that, you know, can just, it's everything, and that it will make you. And as long as you can find this wonderful, amazing thing part of you, you'll be able to do all of it and you will be perfect and you will be able to do all the things and look at all the success that you'll have and look how wonderful your life will be. And like I said, I feel like the biggest danger in that is that it's not true. It's just not true. Nobody is perfect. God is perfect. And we are a mess. And because of him, we gain that strength to be able to continue despite the fact that life is still going to be rough and there's still going to be problems and we're still going to be a mess. And so if I could say that there was a danger in that, it's that, you know, here's a statistic for you too. 1 in 6 women in the United States is on an antidepressant, because I feel like there is this huge push for women to be able to find this thing inside of them on their own to be able to do all the things. And you just can't. You can't. And that's okay. I just want to tell you, that's okay. You don't have to do all the things. You don't. You have to find him to be able to find that peace, like I said, in the storm.
Come on. Listen, we can. You were just not trying hard enough. Shelby, you just weren't trying hard enough. That's really what it was. If you would have just tried harder, if you would have prayed harder, if you would have lit more candles, if you would have stood on your head more, you would have meditated more, you could have just done it. No?
Yeah, that's what everybody would like for you to believe. I feel like that's what the entire world wants you to believe right now. And it's just not true. It's not true.
The thing that blows my mind on you again is not only is Mormonism in your background, you have other faiths that you kind of, if we were thinking about it like a buffet, we had one in our community called Hometown Buffet. You could go there and you could get a, you know, smorgasbord of whatever. Like, oh, I want some pudding. I want some nachos. I want some steak. I want some of this. I want some of that. You know, that's what's so great about a buffet. But you've tried it all. What makes you come back to Christianity saying, listen, this is the way, the truth, and the life, and that no one can find the Father except through him being Jesus? What made you make that decision?
Well, I will say this, through this whole journey, like I said, when I first left the church, I left God altogether. And then I kind of went on a thing where I knew that there was a God. And because I knew that I wasn't going to be Mormon, but I was still open to the Christian faith, I started kind of going to some Christian churches and I kind of started listening there and kind of dabbling in that, but never making that mind shift, never making that transformation. And I think there's a lot of people even still in the Christian faith who just go on Sunday and they've never made that shift. They've never made that change. But then because I didn't have that root, I didn't have that deep faith, it left me open to still wanting and still looking. And so, yeah, I mean, I call myself a self-help junkie. I mean, like I read every self-help book, Eckhart Tolle, all the stuff, Oprah was my thing, you know, it just really kind of trying to always fill that void and listening to everything they had to say that I could do it all. And so I tried that, did a lot of yoga. So got into kind of Buddhism for a while, kind of just really always trying to fill the void. I feel like that moment though, when I realized that I could not do it all. And it was hard. It was the hardest moment of my entire life. Who did I call out to? To God. I cried out to Jesus. And I think it's funny because, you know, someone said this to me the other day, you know, when you say, oh my God, and everybody's like, don't say that right now, because like as Christian, we don't want to use the Lord's name in vain, but people don't go around saying, oh my Buddha. People don't say that. So, I mean, really, God is, he's all around us. He's innate. I feel like to deny him is almost, you have to kind of go the opposite direction in order to really deny the fact that he is in us. We can see, we can feel him in our creation. I mean, he's our creator. But to why I now go back to Christianity, I feel like I never was there. It was when I found him, it was undeniable, and I will never leave, because he is the thing that filled me up. He filled up my heart and he changed me from the inside out. We talk about Romans. I love Romans. That is what Romans talks about too, is that transformation of the soul. I died in who I was and I am reborn as a new person in Jesus. And it's truly how I feel. It's not even like a question. And would I have ever found that in any of those other faiths? I don't believe it would have been possible to have found that.
Your women's kind of seems like enthusiast, like maybe women's ministry, women's speaker, maybe on the horizon for you in some respects, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to send you out to Provo, Utah. We have a sold out stadium. By the way, Provo is in the backdrop of the Mormon faith. They have this little stadium out there. They have a big Y on the center of the field, the 50-yard line, standing for Brigham Young. It's Brigham Young University. Their campus football stadium seats 63,725 people. Now imagine if we get 63,725 women in that stadium who have walked the road of Mormon faith. What would you tell them in this moment right now?
Ooh, no pressure. Holy smokes. That is a bit scary. I think that I would definitely tell them that they are not alone and that it is okay to question, because the real Jesus can be questioned up and down, and he is just going to show himself over and over again. So if you have questions, do not be afraid to go on a Jesus journey and to find him, because he is waiting for you. He is waiting for you with his arms out, waiting for you to just to come to him and to know that everything that you are striving for, all those works, all the pressure that has been put on you to do all the things, and there's a lot. If I was talking to these women, I'd say that I know there is a lot on you to be so much. God does not expect for you to do all that, and that he is waiting for you to give it to him. And when you do, that transformation is going to change everything.
Would any of them listen to you?
I absolutely 100% believe that there would be a good chunk of women there who definitely would. Because for me, I had an easy out, but I know there are so many women who are in it who don't. They don't have an easy out, and they're hungry. They are hungry to know God. And I do think that if someone said, it's okay to go on this Jesus journey, it's okay to question, they would absolutely listen. I had one woman tell me for a little while, because of the way that you have to be kind of stuck in it all, she said, I had to give myself permission to take a break. I couldn't say I was going to leave yet, but I did. I had to give myself permission to take a break. To all you women out there, it's okay to take a break.
There's power in the pause. I learned that during the March Madness tournament. There's power in the pause. So Shelby, how can people find out more about you? Where can they go? I know you mentioned the podcast a little bit a moment ago, but where can people go to hear you, listen to you, and find out more about you and what you're all about?
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate that. So Finding Faith Above is my podcast. It's all about finding faith in our God. I was very jealous of people who had faith all growing up. I could see people who had faith and I just didn't have it. And so finding that faith in God above. So findingfaithabove.com is my podcast. It's my website. Everything I do now is dedicated to, you know, those basic Christian beliefs, those things that are so confusing when you go from any sort of legalistic religion into Christianity can be very complicated. And so trying to help you to make that change. So basic Christian beliefs. And then we tell stories of finding faith. So women's, those stories when they had that transformation. So findingfaithabove.com is my podcast, and all the good stuff is on there.
It's great. Thank you so much. The end of the show called Senseless. It's just these five random questions, sixth being the wild card. So I'm going to roll on your behalf. You okay with that?
Yeah, this is kind of scary, but okay, go for it.
All right. So I'm going to roll for you, see what number you get. It's really scary. Here we go. Number three is this. So there's the number three proof of it. What is that one smell? That one smell when you get a whiff of, you have to smell more of it.
Let's see. this is kind of funny, but there's this old lotion from Victoria's Secret. I know this sounds so weird, but it's called Love Spell, and it reminds me of college. And it's like, I kind of like it and don't like it because it reminds me of college. But I'm like, ooh, somebody has Love Spell on, and I could like smell it anywhere. That's a really funny thing to say, but yeah.
And the name of it is Love Spell?
Yes, it's Love Spell by Victoria's Secret.
I feel like you could voice their commercial right now, maybe, but that's hilarious. Out of all the smells in the world, that's what we centered it back to. Okay, all right.
Yeah, I guess so. I think that would probably be it. Because I guess maybe it said, I have some right now. Maybe that's why it's on my brain. Because I bought it after like a million years. And so I'm now like...
You found it like on Amazon or something?
I kind of like that's it, funny. Yeah.
That's so hilarious. But Shelby, I know we kind of asked you the BYU question in talking to the women. But if there's a moment you could have with your dad right now, I want to give you a moment. You can say whatever you want to him. I mean, I don't know if you're going to choose to share this with him, and maybe he knows some of this stuff. But publicly, what would you say to anyone that you love that maybe is still there? What would you say?
You don't have to be perfect, and that we love you anyways, and that God will always love you, and he does not expect for you to be perfect. In fact, he just wants you so badly to give it to him. Take that pressure off yourself, because it's never going to be perfect. You're loved so much regardless.
Shelby, again, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. All right, guys and gals, kids and campers alike, sad time when we have to say goodbye. But again, it's only goodbye for a moment. We'll be right back with you next week with a brand new episode next Wednesday. So join us there on your favorite podcast platform of choice. We love that, of course. We also love it if you jump on over to opspodcast.com. Leave us a review there if you like what you're hearing. Even just send us a little voicemail. We'd love that too. But I also want to call this to your attention, and that's this. What is something in your life? What is something in your life that you need to give up? What is it? Now, for me, I know this sounds super uber ridiculously silly, but as long as I can remember, I've always chewed my fingernails. It's disgusting. It's a terrible habit. My wife just hates it. She probably would tell you right now, it is the thing she hates the most about me. If there was one thing, she would probably say she actually hates that. It's disgusting. It's horrible. But some reason I continue to do it. I don't know why. It's dumb. But maybe you have that thing right now that you need to let go of, that's been disgusting, that's been terrible, that people around you maybe don't necessarily like. And they've been telling you for a while now, like, hey, there's another way. Hey, there's another way. There's a better way. And again, I want to reiterate, Shelby was not here to bash Mormonism, and I don't think she did. And I'm not even saying Mormonism is disgusting. For me, it's not for me. For Shelby, it's not for her. But again, I'm talking about the idea of surrendering something. Maybe today's the day you finally say, okay, enough is enough. I cannot be practically perfect in every way. I have to give this up. Let me know what that is. Again, opspodcast.com. Love to hear from you. You can let us know on social media, OPS Podcast Show, under Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Love to hear what those are, what that one thing is that you need to let go of. Let me know. Again, love to hear it. And remember this. Do not ever forget. Remember, when you walk in other people's shoes, you really do get a different perspective on life. Thank you so much for listening, and stay tuned till next week when we walk in other people's shoes.